You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. It is Wednesday, hump day, got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, you will get it done. And you will do it safely. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Kwaku. I definitely want to give my good brother Kwaku some shout out, because you don't hear them pop-ups, do you? Ha ha. Man, thank you so much, brother. Man, so it was ridiculous. We're going to forego our usual announcements because I have a guest and I want to give this brother as much time as possible to not just to promote his book, but to just to talk. And you know, for those who are in the Atlanta area, he's well known, but for those who are outside Atlanta, and of course we broadcast all over, you know, I want to introduce you to a model of a man, a model of a husband, a father, a person who was an attorney, and how that model of a man should be replicated. And if it was, boy, we'd be much better off. I am going to do the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, because that is always important as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to do yesterday, July 13th. If you spill blood, blood alone can strengthen it. The Akan proverb. Forgiveness of evil without rectification is against Ma'at. Balance can only be returned through prayer, effectively bringing the predator to a suffocating heel and permanently removing its talons. There is no easy way to Ma'at. There is not supposed to be. The idea of an easy reconciliation by Irugu is one of the biggest farces perpetrated against the minds of a mental cycle ever. Against the minds of the mental cycle ever. Ma'at is not being murdered and asking to be murdered again until the murderers awaken their murderous nature in the hope that they will weep in guilt and rise in repentance. True, the mental-sidal majority, in desperate, mind-twisting, sanity-surrendering efforts to remain comfortably cradled in Urugu's blood-encrusted arms, can pretend otherwise, but the pendulum returning order from violent disruption never changes. It is universally consistent in its deadly movement. It awaits the karma that only warriors can bring. Affirm, I return. What is given in a way will return balance. Affirm, I return.
what is given in a way that will return balance. July 14th. The unfortunate circumstances confronting the so-called Negro can be attributed to the fact that he is being used as a tool by a gang of Machiavellian schemers operating from the North, led by Caucasian people with a regular return of house Negroes fronting as leaders. These scoundrels have no program to offer the masses of African people, but hold up before the myopic focus of frustrated Negroes the degenerate mirage of miscegenation, social equality, and integration with white people. Carlos Cooks. Carlos Cooks, that's my brother's, one of his favorite brothers, Carlos Cooks. Our warriors are the vanguard who advance as one toward the reclamation of African power. All that they do fits within an agenda, a mission, a vision of African sovereignty. And not only do they identify the treasonous among us and separate community power from them, they never forgot and never will forget them. For they know that they are the social children of traitors. So even if threatened and beaten to the point where survival demands that these turncoats find it expedient to pretend to join our ranks, warriors know that they will ever look for another opportunity to assist others in our destruction. They know the emptiness of their apologies and the disastrous consequences of forgiving and forgetting what they have done, as they know this, as they do this for Urugu. The warrior's sight is clear and full of remembrance. They know that they are here to provide through word and deed. The greatest inspiration that African people could behold of undaunted, unconfused, uncompromised direction. They are our warrior ancestors in every sense of the term. Affirm, I operate within a program which empowers African people. Affirm, I operate within a program that empowers African people. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Brothers and sisters, I want to welcome my guest to the program. I've told him about the program many times before, but he is a busy man, that is for sure. And finally, he has taken the time out, and I appreciate it very much. The people's attorney here in the Atlanta area, Attorney Maoli Davis. Brother, how are you this morning?
Baba, how you doing?
I am well, man. I'm so happy to have you, and happy the opportunity for us to have conversation to our listeners, man. I'm doing well. What about you, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's so much going on, you know.
I know.
I'm grateful for the fact that you have built out this platform to share with the African world what's going on, because there's so much.
Yes.
And there's so much information that we need to share with each other, to fortify each other, to support each other, to build. So I'm straight ahead. I was in New York last week, got a chance to connect with our comrades and brothers and sisters from D12 Movement. And that was encouraging and inspiring. So back in Atlanta now, about to head down to Statesboro on the case of Julian Lewis, a case that the whole world should be watching. My brother was killed on August the 7th, his one-year anniversary of his murder by a state trooper, a Georgia state trooper, Jacob Thompson, happened on August the 7th. The GBI, which is pretty unheard of, arrested the state trooper. The Georgia Public Safety fired the state trooper. A judge turned around and charged the state trooper with murder of Julian Lewis. And just 2 weeks ago, a grand jury in Scriven County, this is Sylvania, Georgia, said that they were not going to indict this trooper And so they are essentially trying to cut them loose. So we're going to need everybody to come down for this on August the 14th. We're calling all people seeking justice down to Sylvania, Georgia.
And believe me, I'd like to get you back on after this has happened. Yeah. No doubt. But is this in the same county where this happened, or is this a different county?
So the county is Scriven County. And Scriven is, so Sylvania, Georgia is in Scriven. This is about 45 minutes from, maybe 35 minutes from Statesboro, Georgia, where Georgia Southern is. It's about an hour and a half from Savannah, Georgia, which is Chatham County. From Atlanta, it's about a 2.5 hour drive from Atlanta. Okay. So we're going to be asking people to just flood into Sylvania in much the way we had to do for Gina 6 mm-hmm. back in, Gina, Louisiana.
That's right.
Nobody knew, you know, and there are these obscure places in these yet to be United States where black folk are being brutalized, and then there is no justice, and we have to mobilize and organize to create pressure on this system so that this family does not go without without justice, without some this trooper being held accountable in some form of fashion.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the one thing about the South here is that, you know, I'm from the North, and as well as you are. You know, you're from Chicago. Yeah. I'm from Milwaukee. And I know in Wisconsin, you know, we're only in the southeastern portion of the state of Wisconsin. There's a, you know, majority of us are in Milwaukee County, in that area, a few in Beloit area, Madison, and so forth. But outside of that, that's it. You know, but here we're all over this state. That's why Black Votes Matter was so instrumental into making it happen for Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, and of course Biden being president, to turn that in. And that goes to you and Stacey Abrams and all the brothers and sisters that organized to make that happen. You know,
yeah, it's work, right?
And it is.
I think we have to be clear about the work that we're doing. And connected to the overall struggle for liberation and sovereignty, that we're clear that getting somebody elected here isn't going to free us, but it does help us, put us in a position so that we might be able to save some of these young people and protect some of them in a way that they're then able to organize and learn and take this culture and infuse it into their very bodies so that they are able to see this world differently and have, and they can reimagine what's possible.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I think that's what I was writing about in the book too.
Yeah. That's right. And it was, and I really enjoyed it. When you sent it to me and thank you so much. I was going to Tulsa at the time, and I read it on the plane and read it in my room and reread it so I can have this conversation with you, because, you know, you're most correct. We need each other. You know, that's I say that all the time as it relates to our community of men and women coming together to produce family. We need each other. And that's what you have done. You and your lovely wife, Jenna, and your two sons and your firm family foundation that you have set. And a model, and to me, I'm not bullshitting. You're a model of what a good man who is, even though you're in corporate, but you're a strong man, and you hold to principle, and you help us as a people. You know, I read part of when you talked about, you know, once you got your law degree and, you know, being with a Caucasian law firm and making money and so forth, and, you know, and of course, that just wasn't you. You know, you had to help the people, you know? Yeah, you know. And I've often said that really and correct me if I'm wrong, often said that somebody who is in corporate America, if you really are American African, if you really want to help our people, it is tough to be in corporate America. You would really have to play both sides. And then who are you, whose allegiance do you really have, you know, because it is extremely difficult.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's complicated. And I think that one of the things that we encourage, and there are people, and I think we recognize we need to have socially conscious people of African descent everywhere.
Yes.
You know, we cannot leave these folks up to their own devices without having one of us in place to, at the very least, observe and report.
Right.
And, you know, report back to our community what's going on. But in a more ideal situation, we got to have our people in place so that we can try to funnel some of the resources, whether they be financial resources, whether they be opportunities, into our community so that we can strengthen our community. And so we've seen, even with Black Man Lab, the work that we do with Young Brothers, we've been able to reach to some of our brothers and sisters who are in these corporate spaces and say, look, get your company to help fund this.
Right.
You know, help give us something so that we can feed these young people, so that we can provide for our homeless brothers and sisters. Help us. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to tap that consciousness and get support. So it's a very, it's like walking a tightrope when you're committed to the liberation of African people, and at the same time you're having to work within these systems that historically are not for us, but we are able to extract an income from them. We're able to get resources. So it's hard work, and I think that's why we have to have opportunities like African Perspectives that ground us, right? So that we, because what will happen is if you can be a conscious African and then go up into one of these institutions and get caught up,
yeah,
lose your Black mind, you know,
yeah, because so you become indoctrinated, you become inculcated.
That's right. And I've seen it. We've sent people. We've organized and helped get folks elected and different things. And then they get in and they don't understand the only reason you're there is to serve us, mm-hmm. not to serve them, but to serve us. And so you are forever accountable mm-hmm. to our people. You're forever accountable to the masses of Black people who sacrificed to put you there. And even if you say, well, look, you know, it's not all of the Black people that put me here. Yes, it is. Through our blood, our sweat, our tears,
that's right.
through what our grandmamas and grandfathers went through, that's the only way that we have any opportunity to be in certain spaces. And then we are obligated to go into those spaces and be of service to our people. And if we don't, it's a betrayal.
Yeah.
It's a betrayal.
And see, that's the African-centered thought, that wherever we are, whatever we're doing, that is our allegiance. But of course, in America, you're trained to be an individual. And so many of the people think that, well, you know, y'all didn't do nothing for me. I got this degree. You know, I went to school. I hustled and did this, you know. And now look at me, man. I got a nice job. I live in a gated community. You know, I got a real nice car. I'm living the dream. In fact, this dream is so good. If you don't have it, it's because of you. Because it's there for everybody. It's there for everybody. I got mine. Get yours. And if you don't get yours, it's your fault. You know?
Right.
Not understanding that its very design, it's not meant even for Caucasians to be successful, let alone us. It's not meant, you know?
Yeah. No, that's it. That's the, and that's the reason I wrote the book. Was to talk to our young people, to speak to my son's generation. It's the title of it says, "We need you, encouraging my son's generation for Black liberation." Mm-hmm. And the whole objective is that we need you to be professionally successful and socially conscious at the same time.
Yeah, and you can be.
Possible.
Exactly.
And you can be. We've always been excellent in these spaces. Mm-hmm. Whatever we have gone into, we have been excellent. Whether we pick up a golf club, if we pick up a telescope, if we pick up any book, anything you name, when African people, because we are the originators of this genius. So all we have to do is be healthy mentally, mm-hmm. and then we're able to master anything and everything because we, you know, it all was birthed out of our intellect and our intellectual genius to begin with. And so the challenge has been for us to not lose our children to this materialistic mindset that says that it's all about individual achievement. And we say, even with our firm, and we started the firm, my wife and I, Jaina, we started back in 2003 before my law partners joined us. And we, our first client, straight from Encobra, straight from Malcolm X Grass Roots Movement, straight from the Nation of Islam. Uh-huh. I mean, pure, it's rooted and based on all of the Pan-African organizations. They came to know me through the Georgia State African-American Studies Department under the leadership at the time, Charles Jones, but then Baba Akinyele Omoja.
Okay.
And so that was how people came to even know me in Atlanta, was just working in community in our Black nationalist Pan-African movement. And that's who supported us first. And that's who allowed us to get our footing and then to build. And now as we have three offices across Georgia and over 25 employees.
Outstanding.
That's based on, and what we say, we don't say self-made. We say we're community made.
That's right.
The community made us, mm-hmm. because the community chose us and has allowed us to grow and do the work and serve the community time and time again. And so that's the difference in an African-centered perspective of how we got, you know, it's the same. We could tell the story two different ways, right? I could tell the story, oh, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. but that would be, you know, there would be folks who want to lift that narrative up.
Yeah.
But if we want to tell the complete story, it always starts with our people.
That's right.
And it always must end with what have we done in the interest of our people. Yeah. And Baba Hannibal Afrique would always encourage us to look at, don't show me your theory, show me your work. Mm-hmm. And this has been our work to build an independent institution that supports Black people, that supports our causes and our interests.
Well, that's why I say that you are our attorney. You are the people's attorney because of the work that you have done uncompromisingly challenged in the system and those who have done bad stuff to us. You know, you have killed us, who have denied us, who, you know, and you have challenged that. And you, I know you will continue to do so. And the organizations that you have involved in, Let Us Make Man, and, of course, the Black Men's Lab, and bringing in resource people, just like you just mentioned a moment ago, that there are some individuals who have expertise. Now, they may not consider themselves revolutionary and so forth, but mm-mm. they have things. But you bring them in and expose them to our youth and expose them to other brothers and sisters who can take advantage of where they're at and maybe network with them to help them in their careers as well, you know?
Oh, and Baba, here's the thing. I wasn't born a revolutionary. I was made one through my exposure and this ecosystem of revolutionary work that was in Buff and in Cobra and the New African People's Organization and ASCAC and and so all of the, and that's why it's so important that we maintain those organizations, those study groups, these radio, television programs, mm-hmm. you know, camps for the young people is that we just don't know what will trigger, what will spark, what will give life to the clarity that we are all blessed to have. When we're clear about our calling, about our responsibility, it also gives us clarity about what our purpose in life is. Mm-hmm. So that we're not, when you're living on purpose, and when your people are oppressed, and I talk about it in the book, when your people are oppressed, the way our people have been oppressed for so many years, a part of our life's purpose has to be alleviating the suffering of our people, of mm-hmm. our children, of our elders, of our families. That has to be part of our very existence. Mm-hmm. If not, we end up being shells of ourselves. How could you possibly feel good and joy if you're not working in the interest of your folk when you see something is wrong?
Right. But that's unfortunately the teaching of this society of individualism. You know, you're concerned about yourself, even to the point of distancing yourself within your immediate family. You know, kicking them to the curb, you know, or even to the point of they got an insurance policy that I could kill. I mean, you remember that when those two young men tried to murder their mom and dad to get that insurance policy about 3 years ago, 4 years ago? It's sad. It's sick.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And even and the father said, I do not want to press charges against my sons. You know, they had a serious momentary lapse of mental judgment, but
that's right.
You know, but of course the state had to prosecute. Correct?
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. They did, and they prosecuted. I remember that. I had forgotten about that. I remember that, and that again speaks to the what we have to understand is that the society that has been created and developed from this Eurocentric framework is not only unhealthy for us, it's unhealthy for them.
Yes, it is.
It's unhealthy.
Yes.
It's unhealthy for the world.
Yes, it
That's
is.
Why it's so critically important that we as African people and indigenous people, that we tap into our spirituality, we tap into our ancient systems of thinking and of connecting to the world, and that we resume our rightful place in providing leadership, not just diversification, but to provide leadership. We have to assume leadership of planet Earth mm-hmm. in order to save the Earth from this Eurocentric individualistic approach that is literally putting us on the brink of extinction.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. This is not, and it's not like we better than this and that. It's just the reality is that when we are at our best, when we are tapping into practicing and manifesting our traditional thoughts and worldview, it's healthy, it's communal. Mm-hmm. It says that I'm not going to put profit over people.
Yes.
It says that I'm not going to destroy the world so that I might get rich, but my children's children won't have a world to live in, because I see that what I do in the context of even African cosmology is that I am my ancestors mm-hmm. and my ancestors are me, and my unborn are coming forward are ancestors, and so we see this continuity, this circle that should not be broken from all levels, not just mm-hmm. on the physical plane, but in the spiritual plane as well. And when we see and recognize that, then we move differently and we make different decisions in this moment, because we know that there's a future that we're accountable for, and there's a past that we're accountable to as well. So that's the work.
Yeah,
that's the work.
And that's what you do. You make that link between past and future. and for us as a people dealing with the present. You know, I only have one quote, and it may not even be original, but this comes up, and because I love our history, and I love us as African people, and I always say that we must learn our history so we can understand the present, so then we can prepare for a future. A lot of us don't understand the present because we don't know our history. We don't know the past. You know,
that's right.
And therefore, many of us don't see a future. You know, because mm-hmm. of our lack of understanding. But the other thing that you pointed out is that it's unfortunate that we don't understand this, because a lot of us don't see a future because of our individualistic mindset, and that we don't give a damn about what happens to anything else. That's the selfish, greedy nature of Europeans. You know, to me, the most detrimental thing that has happened to this planet is European Caucasian, I don't say white supremacy, but that's what it is, because they're not white and they sure the hell ain't supreme. But I call it European Caucasian extremism, because they are very extreme. Racism, because they're the ones who created racism. Race is not a real concept. It's not a real construct mm-hmm. biologically, mm-hmm. but it is a real construct, you know, physiologically, because of what they have done. Racism and privilege, because of what they established, they feel they are privileged in life to do whatever the hell they want to do, and now to the planet's detriment. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's where our power comes from. Our power comes from knowing who you are. I talk about it in the book, where I talk about, I make this comparison. You know, my dad played with the Globetrotters, so he used to teach me basketball parables, right?
And, did he? Big Mel. You know, Big Mel Davis.
Yeah, yeah, you know, Baba Conrad, our ancestor now, Conrad Worrell.
Yeah.
We would talk basketball, and we would, you know, there were always these comparisons and these stories that could be told. And the story and the comparison is that if LeBron James in his prime, when he was at his prime, and I have to acknowledge he's past his prime now, even though he's still a MVP caliber player.
Yes, he is.
But if LeBron James at his prime and Dirk Nowitzki at his prime, if they played a one-on-one game and LeBron James tried to merely imitate Dirk's game, he didn't play his game.
Right.
Instead, he wanted to play that fade away off the left foot, fade, fall back, jump shot. Dirk would beat him, because LeBron cannot outdo Dirk being Dirk, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what LeBron, if he plays his game, I think there's no question if he drive the ball to the basket, muscle him, dunk over him, all of that, I think there's no question that he would win the game playing his game. And what we found ourselves doing, and what I talk to young people about, is that you have to first learn and understand our game. What's healthy for people of African descent?
Mm-hmm.
When we have been at our best, when we stole away in Brazil and built the Palmeiras,
Palmeiras,
when we went in and formed these quilombos, we didn't recreate a Portuguese mm-hmm. or a French or an English setting. What we attempted to do was recreate Africa.
That's right.
Because Africa was in us, and that we knew that it was inherently good. And so we rebuilt those kinds of little Africas and civilizations where we supported each other. We worked together communally. We honor our elders, our children, our women, and we did it in a way that was nation building. And so we have to help our young people, and that's why the history and the culture is so critical in any achievement. If we are to achieve, we gotta embed our history and culture in that.
That's right.
In that work with our young people, and that's the power of knowing and understanding who we are and knowing your game, because when you know your game and you play it, they can't beat you.
That's right.
Well, nobody can beat you.
That reminded me of 1980 or 81, Sugar Ray Leonard and Hands of Stone, Roberto Duran, in the first fight. Sugar Ray Leonard fought Roberto Duran's fight. And unfortunately, because he fought Roberto Duran's fight and not his own, you know, he lost the fight. He didn't look good. He lost the fight. He wanted to fight on the inside, you know, a couple swings away, and it didn't happen. So the second fight, where he moved and danced and frustrated Duran to the point of what? No mas.
No mas.
No mas. I can't handle this, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. We must do things in the African way. But because of some of us, unfortunately, who have been so indoctrinated, we believe that what the European has said, that Africa is inferior and there is no African way. There's the best way, of course, is the European way. And that's what many of us espouse and many of us work in, as opposed to saying there is a way for us that benefits us. That comes and brings us together. You know, in my libation before we program, I talk about the fact of why we don't have good community life and no good family life is because we lack the knowledge of ourselves. You know, if we understood our history and our culture, you know, from before our captivity and what happened in our captivity, then we would begin to understand how important it is that we come together, that we close ranks, pull resources, and do for ourselves, and make our community what it should be for us, you know.
Right, right.
But unfortunately, I go ahead.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'm so grateful for, and I talk about kind of my evolution. I told somebody the other day when I was in New York, I shared that when I came out of high school, I went to De La Salle Institute on the south side of Chicago. When I graduated, I went to the Naval Academy, and I went there with the thought that I would be the first Black president of the United States of America. That was my mindset when I came out of high school at 18 years old and going to the Naval Academy where Jimmy Carter had attended, and I was thinking, you know, man, I'm going to stay true to myself as a young Black man, but going to the Naval Academy is going to create a trust level that is going to allow me to be able to go into politics and do this and do that. And while I was at the Academy, I had a series of events happen to me that began to awaken my consciousness. And this was in 1987. And so if you think about it, you had Tawana Brawley, you had Public Enemy, you had the Slave Theater in New York, you had the explosion of the African-centered education movement that some people call Afrocentrism.
ASCAP was going strong.
ASCAP going strong. And so you just have all of this happening, and I meet a elder by the name of Dr. Edward Robinson in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I meet Dr. Robinson, he had written a book called The Journey of the Songhai People. And he came onto our ship, thanks to a good friend of ours, Butch Slaughter. He came onto our ship, and we had a soul food Black History Month extravaganza on this ship in the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. And he said, and we literally almost in a spiritual sense were sitting at the feet of this elder. And I remember in this moment, as I'm speaking right now to the listeners, him saying, "Come here, children, and let me tell you who you are."
I say.
And when he said that, and he began to not start with our enslavement, but he took us to the city of Janae, to the city of Timbuktu, to the Songhai Empire, to the Ahmad Baba, to the University of Sankore. He took us there visually. He painted this picture of who we were before our captivity. Mm-hmm. And it woke me up. It woke me up. I mean, every time I think about it, I'm grateful.
Rashad.
And he laid it out, and I became clear that we are an African people who were brought here at gunpoint, who were brought here through force and violence. But we, before this attack on our humanity, we had built civilizations that were undeniably Black African civilizations. And then I was able to then plug into ASCAC and begin to understand Kemet and understand Nubia and understand those great Black African civilizations and stop being ashamed. Stop being ashamed of being African. Mm-hmm. And really begin to fall in love with myself, with my African roots and heritage and legacy. And it changed. It changed my perspective. And then, you know, we always have to be clear about the attack against us, this systemic attack against people of African descent, not just in America, but worldwide.
Exactly.
Colonialism and the enslavement of African people worldwide. Mm-hmm. And that was crystallized for me by Brother Dale Jones from Know Thyself Bookstore, who wrote Culture Bandits and the Black Holocaust and a number of other books. Mm-hmm. And he was the war correspondent. And he, right, so I got both of those, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I got the African clarity, but then I also became clear that there was a war on African people, and that war in 1989 and 90, 91, 92, 93 was ongoing. And that war continues to this very day.
That's right. That's right. That's you know, I've met a number of people who have been in the armed services. And of course, when you think about the armed services of the United States, the main purpose of the armed services is to protect and preserve and maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves, not just here in America, but globally, because America is the military arm of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. It is the military arm, and there are many of us who are in that military arm, even in high ranks, you know, who will defend that. But I've met some men and some sisters like you who, even though, you know, you were in it and in force, in fact, you were in it at a high level because you went to the Naval Academy. Some people just go through basic training and, you know, trained to do this and that, and then, you know, sometimes send you to Afghanistan or send you off to war. But I met some brothers and sisters who know who they are, who after, I mean, Baba Baruti, he was in the service.
Yes.
You know, Mawali Baruti was in the service.
John Henry Clark.
Yes, John Henry Clark.
Haki Madhubuti.
Okay, yeah.
You know. Anderson Thompson.
Andy Thompson, you know, so man. A great ancestor. Yeah.
So we and that's why we have to be careful, you know, as a conscious community, not to rule brothers and sisters out because of where they find themselves. Because you don't know where your consciousness will kick in at, right? Those who are not born in the movement, you know, some of our young people, their consciousness is kicking in prison.
Yeah.
I'm in communication with brothers who are in prison, who are practicing Ifa and understanding African spirituality differently.
Mm-hmm.
They're those who find themselves on college campuses and they you know, are awakened.
Mm-hmm.
And the key to it is for us to be able to continue to maintain these quilombos, these spaces where they can come and be safe,
Right. And they learn, and they can come and learn who they are. These are sacred spaces.
That's right.
They are sacred spaces. Right. And the men and the women who promote them and who organize them, you know, are invaluable to us as a people because of what they do, the sacrifices they make. You know, some of the people do make tremendous sacrifices because they got jobs, you know,
right,
and homes and so forth, you know, but they're willing to say, hey, this is who we are, as opposed to, you know, just going along to get along and happy to be where he is, you know.
I mean, right. And Abaka Soon Soon, right?
When yeah.
Those gatherings,
yeah.
We have to have these African revivals and renewals of our spirit,
mm-hmm.
and reconnect and affirm, you know, because it's, I think Bell Hooks or one of the writers said it, you know, it's good to know that you are not alone.
Yes.
And there's strength in knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there may be people who are in, I was in Rota, Spain, and we were able to, in Rota, Spain, pull together all of these. We had Air Force people, Marines, we had Navy people, but we had an organization called the African American Heritage Committee. And that was run year round on this military base. And we were able to pull together these books and start the Anderson Thompson African History Book Collection. So there's a, right now in Rota, Spain, if you go to the library that's on that base, there's a collection of African books in the name of Anderson Thompson, because he had had such an impact on us over the 3 years that we were there, and continue to impact. So we brought him there. We brought him. We brought Brother Leon Harris and Sister Yvonne from the Comanche
Chicago
Institute,
yeah,
there.
Chicago.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
to teach us the Medunetra.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're taught, even those in the military, it was like fish to water. We just embraced it. Folks still. I've got a brother who has learned the glyphs, like, I mean, backwards and forwards, and he never went to university, but he picked up and started learning and started taking these classes. So we have to continue to offer these opportunities to be African.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, to embrace
That's right.
it.
To embrace it. You know, I mean, I understand when you have been so deeply, unfortunately, locked into what America is about. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, and you have embraced that, unfortunately, then you alienated yourself from your people, from your community. You don't care about that. You go with women outside of outside of our cultural group. You associate with those who are outside of our cultural group. In fact, you are in a deep denial of who you are as an African person, and you operate in that fashion. And unfortunately, there are many who operate in that fashion, you know, because you've been trained to believe that Africa never did anything, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created anything of any significance or any, you know, and nothing could be furthest from the truth, of course, but we believe that, you know, because we've been trained to believe that. And so we don't come together. You know, because we consistently think of ourselves as an individual, you know, and it's to our detriment, and it's to our future's detriment, you know. I mean, here in Atlanta, if we could get it together, you know, we have a lot of people here in Atlanta, and we have a lot of people with wherewithal who have money here in Atlanta, but yet we don't have one damn supermarket. We don't have we don't even have a service station tied to a convenience store in the city of Atlanta. I did remember looking online, and they had on Facebook, they had a brother and a sister who had a service station convenience store. I can't even remember what county it was, but that was just it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the power that we could possess if we had that collective mindset would be tremendous here. Would be tremendous.
Right.
But yet, because of the, you know, what we have been trained to believe, we act in that way and we don't come together. You know, I mean, yes, we will come together on instances that may happen to our people to a great degree. And I know you've made calls out, just like you were talking about the situation in downstate about the brother who was murdered last year, August 7th. And I know that,
yes,
you know, hopefully our people will come out for that, you know, and other things that I remember you making calls for and taking buses to here and there and even marching to make it to make sure that we are clearly aware of the circumstances of the situation and what we must do. And I appreciate you for that, man. I really do, you know. But yet and still, when the majority of our people, you know, but then again, we're not going to get the majority. That's why we work with what we got every Monday evening that YMCA off of Campbellton Road would be packed.
Yeah.
Would be packed. And I thank you for that, man. Thank you for
inviting
me.
And we're coming back, Baba.
Yes, sir. You got to,
this
man.
Monday.
Oh, really?
This Monday, July 19th, we'll be back at the Andrew and Walter Young YMCA for our first in-person since the
pandemic.
The pandemic.
Wow.
Yep. Our first in-person. So we are excited. You know, so you got to be in the space.
Oh, I'm going to be there, man. I'm gonna be there next Monday.
We're gonna do 6:30 to 8:00. They close the Y at 8 now, so we have to shut it down. But we're gonna be 6:30 to 8, and we've got young brothers who will be co-facilitating with us. And we got, you know, it's gonna be truly intergenerational.
Beautiful.
Truly intergenerational.
Well, that's what should happen. That's what should happen, because I mean that's what it's always been. You've had young people presenting, you've had elders presenting, you had contemporaries presenting. It was always beautiful, and you had a nice crowd. Even as the pandemic was being known, we had a few sessions in the gym where we kind of like did a little distancing, remember?
That's right. That was the last.
Yeah.
Our last set was in the gym. Because,
I know. I was there.
And we didn't know. We didn't know. That was, and we had Baba Mufasa.
Right. Mufasa's son.
His son, who's a doctor, who went to Cuba and got his medical training.
Yeah.
And he came and presented, and we didn't know what we were about to embark on. And the next thing you know, everything was just shut down.
Yep.
And we had to go virtual.
Yep.
We had to go virtual, but here we are.
Right on. I look forward to next Monday, man. Believe me, I do. In fact, if you get a chance to send me some information, and for those who are listening in the Atlanta area, and you have a son, a young man or somebody who you are Jegna to, you know, that you work with, you know, have him come to let us, you know, have him come to the program, you know, because it is dynamic. It really is. The Black Men's Lab. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm a link. So I'm a link in this chain, brother.
And it won't break here.
That's right. I'm a Lincoln
chain.
That's my
name, Jiri Algani.
Yes, I'm a
Jiri. That was her rally cry, one of our great, great reparations organizers and leaders. And her husband just made transition, they'll be lifting him up, Baba Mausi. So they are joined now again in eternity in the spiritual realm. We're going to be there with the Algani family, one of our very, you know, great Pan-African, New African families in the Atlanta metro area. And you know how it is, you know, wherever we are, we have families that have built and have maintained and held the culture. And the Algani family is one of them. Obviously, Mama Tamu and Baba Hakima,
Baba Hakima,
their family.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and Baba AK, Akinyele Mojin, and Sister Aminata, two of my godparents. So it's just a lot of families, and that's what I'm saying.
That's what's important is family life, and the reason why we don't have good community life is because we don't have good family life because of the disruption and with the intent. because the European knows that the strength from us is within family. So that's why they, in the 70s and 80s, took in during the welfare situation, no, you cannot have a man in your home. You cannot have family, you know. And just like the movie Claudine, where they show James Earl Jones, who's hiding in the closet, you know.
Right.
You know, Mr. Welfare right. Man. But listen, I'm going to take a break. When we come back from the break, okay. We do have some callers. We'll take these callers to talk with. I'm talking today with my good brother, attorney Mollie Davis, with the Davis-Bozeman Law Firm, but one of the true African-centered brothers who has done great work here in the Atlanta area and throughout the state of Georgia. And I hope there are other brothers and sisters who will follow his lead and follow his model. So brothers and sisters, you stay with us. We're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you. Everybody thinks we're on the mother. Who are they to judge us?
Mother, mother.
Simply call me sweet where I hello.
Mother, mother.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Usually I go into announcements and the lineup for Time for an Awakening Media, but I'm going to forego that because I want to have more conversation with my dear brother and friend, Attorney Molly Davis, here in Atlanta, Georgia, and the fine, great work that he has been doing and continues to do. And also, too, the example that he makes, you know, I think that's important, you know, for other individuals to see. Yeah, you can be in corporate America and still be a brother and a sister and still do conscious things and still help our people. You know, that's important. You know, in his book, We Need You. And I like that. I like that title because we do. We need our young people. We need young brothers and sisters to awaken themselves and to develop that consciousness, that understanding of who we are culturally and historically. You know, Dr. Clark, you know, because we suffer globally. We have no friends. When you look at the history of the world and when you look at things that are happening right now, everywhere we are, we're getting dogged out. We're at the low economic rung. You know, no matter where it is. And yet we are the first people. We gave the world its first humanity. And so Dr. Clark says, you want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. Not the shape of your chin or the cleft in it or your eyebrows arch. No, like who you see historically, like who you see culturally. And those who are like you. And embrace those who are like you. You know, and that's what Brother Molly Davis has done and the things that he promotes, you know. And so that's why, to me, I'm very honored and happy to have him. And to talk about his book, also, too, even though his book deals a lot with brothers, and as I was reading through it, you're going to come out with a second book that pretty much deals with sisters, huh?
I have to. The sisters have been so critical in my development, you know, Mama Marimba, Mama Queen Mother Njeri Ogoni, Ajua Ayatora, Sharshi McIntyre, you know, those are those rich traditions and folks who, you know, just Dr. Doris Derby, just dropping knowledge and wisdom on you. Obviously my biological mother, my wife, mother-in-law, Lee Johnson.
Yeah, beautiful
all,
woman. Yes.
You know, they pour into you. They support you. They give you good corrective, you know, they give you that insight and correction. So definitely looking to write out some of those lessons that have been learned from the sisters. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to focus this first piece because it really started as I was on the flight to D.C., taking my oldest, Kobe, to Howard University when he was just graduated from high school and was going as a freshman to Howard. And I'm on the flight, and I just did an outline. I said, you know, the things that I want to share with him, because I understand the power of that collegiate experience and how it's so transformative. And, you know, you go from being a child to being a young adult. And so I was like, man, let's try to put some fat on this head. So I started this outline, and it took me 4 years to finally get the whole book done.
Right on.
But and it's not a long book. So
no, it's not.
People saying, oh, yeah, it's
a, no, it's a, me, listen, know. It is a great read, brothers and sisters. I don't know, you know, we'll talk about how you can get it if it's at your local bookstore or Amazon, whatever, how you can get it. It is a great read. It really is. And particularly in today's world, and it chronicles a lot of the things that are happening right now, the George Floyd situation, the assault on the Capitol, all kinds of things within it. But basically, it is towards young people and this generation. And that's what I love about it. You know, once again, it just as you were talking about earlier about the black lab, intergenerational, linking the elders and the young people together, linking fathers with their sons. That's critical.
Yeah, and that's what I was hoping to do, was just try to capture some of that energy and help us remember who we are, how we came, just all of the power that young people have and have had over the years, you know, because so often we miss that young people have been the real fuel of movement work, you know, and that is something that we have to help this generation of young people know that prior generations have changed the world.
That's right.
And it's their time and it's their turn to change the world. And mm-hmm. there's no, and it's, you know, we have examples, we have models. And so that's what we have to embrace is the ability to, for them to know with the encouragement and the tutelage and the love of their elders, of their parents, of really committed elders that they can change the world. And that's what our whole push has been about, is just unlocking for them that potential of really being transformative, especially in this moment. You know, right now we are at what I would consider, and I think it's been said, a Wahimi Mesu, mm-hmm. you know, in ancient yeah. Kemet, it, you know, a rebirth, a repetition. In European thought, they describe it as a renaissance,
mm-hmm.
but we describe it as a Wahimi Mesu, a rebirth. And we are here to be born yet again as an African people, as we were in the 1990s, as we mm-hmm. were in the 1960s, mm-hmm. as we were during, you know, as we built black townships. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to keep renewing our spirit and allowing ourselves to move in the way that we know is most healthy for us. And that's what, you know, some of the things that I was hoping to, mm-hmm. You know, to capture.
Right.
And to talk about.
Well, listen, we do have some callers in the queue. Remember to hit star twice. So you can join this conversation. My guest today is Attorney Malady Davis, and the great work that he is doing in terms of our working with our people. Like I said, he is the people's attorney here in Atlanta. I know. Let me get this call. 646. Good afternoon, Jay. Good afternoon. 646.
Hey, good afternoon, OC to your guest. I was hearing your guest earlier speak about, is he from New York?
No, he's from Chicago.
Okay, Chicago, but I had heard him mention the slave theater.
Oh, yeah.
In one of his responses. I don't know if that was from him just coming to maybe do a lecture or being part of it, because, you know, at one time, one of our greatest lawyers that we have ever produced, Alton Maddox, who the SALT team has just basically destroyed his career because of the ability that he had to deal with them and to circumvent the manners in which they went after our people with the law, and to just constantly beat them. They took away his license, and, you know, it's funny because back in the day, him, Herm Daddy Al, and someone else who they don't talk about often, C. Vernon Mason, who was disbarred because of his shenanigans, and now, funny, he's a pork chop chicken eating preacher, so that goes to tell you a lot right there. they had New York City basically on fire as far as, you know, trying to get justice for what was happening to our people. I mean, one of their biggest cases was Michael Stewart. That basically set it off, and then you others that follow with Louima. But, you know, a lawyer like that is a rarity. So when he speaks about the Slave Theater, it just brings back beautiful memories of seeing Khalid Muhammad, like he said, one of the great minds that nobody talks about but should know about, Shashi McIntyre. I mean, back in the day, you had some real serious committed intellectual Africans.
And you still do. You still do today.
Yeah, you still do. But what I will say is that it's a test study on how the white man manipulates black people into going away from, in a sense, revolutionary spirit and fighting against the oppression that is so quite obvious that the blind can see, but for some reason we just cast aside. So, I mean, I'm glad to know that the brother had the opportunity to be a part of that greatness at the Slave Theater. But, you know, I will always say this. Any lawyer that knows and respects automatics, I take my hat off to him because, you know, the one thing they never really talked about, the greatness of automatics was, and I know this gentleman as a lawyer, he could maybe speak on it, was what automatics did in the Central Park case. He immediately told them that I want to go to trial with my client. And that basically got his client charges dismissed. And it's sad that the other attorneys, and some of the other attorneys were decent attorneys, didn't do the same. But, you know, that's something that nobody never really talks about. He immediately said, let's start the trial right now. And that was how that kid was able to get from under that that case.
Okay. All right, just hang on, Jay. Brother Molly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I visited the Slave Theater. When I was in Philadelphia, I would come from Philly to New York to go to the Slave Theater, and I remember the one powerful gathering was Cornel West was speaking at the Slave Theater, and Dr. Jeffries was there. And after Cornel West finished, Dr. Jeffries stood up and took some liberties and made some corrections to some of Dr. West's discourse, and it was an incredible moment to be in there and to feel that vibe and energy. And I'll tell you that Black Man Lab is in many ways modeled after the Slave Theater in that we are seeking to have a space every single week where Black people, Black men in particular, can come, be in a safe and sacred space, get powerful information, renew their spirits, as well as identify any social service support that they need as well. So that the Slave is so much that we experience that impacts how we shape our vision for the future. But that's why we got to keep creating and keep putting it out there. So I've had a number of opportunities to engage with Alton Maddox and to learn from him and to hear from him. He's been down here. I think the last program that I was on with him was he was on, and Dick Gregory, and I found Antoana Brawley, and I found myself on the stage with that group of very powerful African folk, and I was grateful to be one in the number with the legendary Dick Gregory and Alton Maddox, as well as the sister Tawana Brawley. So, you know, all of these experiences help shape our consciousness, and we just have to keep creating African revolutionary experiences for those that are yet to come, that are out here, that need them to continue to build their consciousness.
Because the more you have them, the more likely that brothers and sisters will be touched and want to know more and want to learn more and will. And that's why they're necessary, you know. What is your opinion of what happens with brothers and sisters and the case becomes national, and then next thing you know, you have Ben Crump and Lee Merritt on the case, you know, and they deal with it from, well, you've been wrong. I'm going to find a way to settle your case, you know.
And yeah.
Go ahead.
And so you know, I've talked with and worked with Brother Crump, talked with, haven't had a chance to work on any cases with Lee Merritt. I lift up our approach. Our approach is a community-based one. I don't really do a long critique because people choose who they choose to represent them. But our approach, and when I say our, I'm talking about Davis Bozeman Johnson, our newest law partner, Francis Johnson, out of Statesboro, Georgia.
Okay.
Beautiful. And Savannah. Mm-hmm. Our approach is, you know, not only are we committed to fighting for your loved one who has been killed or paralyzed or maimed by law enforcement, we're also trying to work in collaboration with community organizers that so that we can build capacity. See, that's part of our challenge, is that when we do too much celebrity, we don't build enough capacity.
Okay.
You know, because we just can't rely on the fact that lawyers or activists are able to generate a lot of media attention. We have to, how do we build coalitions on the ground in Georgia where these things are happening? And that's what we're looking to do in Julian Lewis. This is what we've looked to do here. What people don't understand, and then I look forward to any other questions. In Georgia, before a brother by the name of Kevin Davis was killed, these police could investigate themselves. They were not being sent to the GBI. They were investigating themselves. Then Kevin Davis was killed. We organized with, and see, because of my political history, I didn't just say, hey, you know, this is a NAACP issue. No, Malcolm X grassroots movement has been researching and highlighting the war in terms of the judicial killings, non-judicial killings of blacks by police and vigilantes. And so we made sure that Malcolm X grassroots movement was a part of a coalition of organizations in DeKalb County that forced DeKalb County to turn the case over to the GBI for an investigation. And that changed and shifted how cases, police-involved shooting cases, were handled across the rest of the state of Georgia. People don't know that history of Malcolm X grassroots movement being a part of that work.
Mm-hmm.
And the coalition building. So I think the coalition approach has to be our approach. That's one of the reasons that even with Black Man Lab, we're doing teams now. And it's not about it being personality driven. It has to be team driven, of teams of facilitators, so that we can replicate Black Man Lab in cities all over the country.
I say.
So that we
good.
We can create these safe and sacred spaces, mm-hmm. where Black men can feel like, hey, I can come into a space. You know, the AA model, right? The Alcoholics Anonymous or NA, Narcotics Anonymous, mm-hmm. where you can go anywhere in the world and find you a meeting where you can get what you need to sustain yourself and to maintain your good mental health. And that is what we need as Black men, our spaces all over planet Earth, mm-hmm. where we're able to come, get support, and keep pressing forward.
Yeah, and to develop networks. I mean, many times, just like you said at the end, these gentlemen will be up here, even, although now you're saying we got to get out of there by 8, but these men will be here, and you can talk to them, some of these young men, and find out all the things that they did to become who they are, that you can, and some of those networks have been solid, where these young men have now are being jagged by these brothers.
Yes.
You know? Because we need Jagnus. Yes. So that's great.
And I give you three or four examples of young men who come out of there with employment, with, you know, the Jagnuship that they need to support them on their journey. My own son, you know, my son who's living in New York right now, doing an internship, it came out of an opportunity that he connected with one of our presenters, Derek Dudley, who had come, who previously has, you know, who works very closely with Common and in the film industry. Mm-hmm. And he plugged my son in, and, you know, my son got an opportunity. I've got two young men working with me right now in my law firm who come out of Black Man Lab.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's building that network, like you said. I think mm-hmm. that's something that I overlooked. It is definitely what you described, the building of mm-hmm. network and Jagnuship.
Yes, and it must take place. Oh, we got another caller. Caller, I'm not sure if this is my brother Paul. Unknown caller, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother.
Yes, it is, brother Paul from the UK, from across the pond. How you doing today, dear brother?
I'm alive and I'm doing well, brother, Baba Ochi. And, you know, good afternoon, good morning to your guest. Good morning to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, my brother.
I don't want to divert the conversation, but I, as you were talking, you gave your rendition of your history, and you were saying that you were in the Navy, I think you said. You went to the military academy, and it reminded me of a story. I just remembered a story when a veteran of the Second World War in Baker told us one day. He said, ship came during the Second World War, a ship came from Britain to pick up some soldiers in the Caribbean, stopping at Jamaica, Trinidad, and other islands. And then it went on to the US. And he said that when they picked up the GIs in the US, they weren't allowed to mix with the rest of the soldiers because of those times they had some sort of apartheid system. Black GIs couldn't mix with the white GIs, so the black GIs had separate quarters. He went on to explain how he never knew about that and how that shocked him, and they weren't comfortable with it. Anyway, when they got to Britain, told a story of drinking in what we call a pub, which is like a drinking place where people drink beer and alcohol, mm-hmm. whatever. And he says that American GIs weren't allowed to go in there because obviously there were white people in there, white running the bar and serving, white women serving. The Caribbean soldiers protested against that because they weren't familiar, they weren't used to that. He goes on to say it ended up in a fist fight. The American military police turned up, had to take away the GIs, and they wouldn't allow that to happen. And what ended up happening is I think the English police had to be involved. And government started, local officials started to get involved because the thing was getting out of hand. And, I found that quite an interesting story, you know what I mean, of comradeship. Right. And how these black soldiers from the Caribbean, you could hear the enthusiasm in his voice. Like, you know, we weren't prepared to take that, you know what I mean? They were prepared to fight, you know, their soldiers, you know. And I just thought that, you know, that they, during that time, obviously they were facing a war, but they saw themselves as brothers. And today, I listen to a lot of American radio stations and a lot of stations around the world. I think, I may be wrong, but underlining, this is what I get, a feeling of xenophobia going on between called African Americans and those Africans from the Caribbean and those Africans from Africa, and it's quite disturbing to me.
Yeah.
The bottom line, it's not only disturbing; it's a little painful as well. Most of the people in the UK who don't have access to these radio stations, or maybe don't have the enthusiasm to listen that I do, they're not aware of this. they're not aware of this level of xenophobia. They have this idea in their heads that African Americans are like, you know, I suppose, I don't know if it's the right word, like almost like the savior. You know, the things that come out of America, music, the culture, don't recognize this level of xenophobia, and a lot of them will be shocked to hear this level of xenophobia which takes place.
Right. And you know, I think what we have to advocate is a baseline for people of African descent, wherever we find ourselves. We have to begin with our origin in terms of how we describe ourselves, how we connect, and we have to start with being people of African descent, that is our root, that is who we are, and that we can't put our affiliations in these various countries ahead of connecting with people, other people of African descent. I'm a board member of the Walter Rodney Foundation. Walter Rodney obviously was great, from Guyana, great thinker, great intellectual, great organizer, who was assassinated in 1980. But the How Europe Underdeveloped Africa.
Great book.
He wrote that book in Groundings with my brothers. Another great piece, a short piece that he wrote where he was in Jamaica. And he was meeting with Rasta brothers and sisters and having gatherings. And so I think part of how we address what our brother from the UK is lifted up is that we have to create these Pan-African spaces where people of African descent throughout the diaspora can come together.
Yes.
Right? So,
yes.
So one of the things that we're going to do in at the end of August in the city of Decatur is our organization, Beacon Hill Black Alliance for Human Rights, is that we're going to have a Pan-African festival in the city of Decatur, because we have a very diverse population of Africans in the city of Decatur, in Clarkston, brothers and sisters from the Sudan, from Senegal, from Ethiopia, from Nigeria, from all over. So we're going to have a Pan-African festival and cultural experience in the city of Decatur. And, you know, that, you know, there's a Pan-African festival in, you know, usually in Chicago. And I know in New York, there's the African Street Festival. But we want to do something here in Georgia where we are pulling together Africans from the Congo. Because we work closely with the Friends of the Congo.
Yeah.
So we want to pull African people together to celebrate African culture in all of our manifestations and variations of it, and not put one group of Africans above another.
That's
hell,
right.
We all oppressed.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want you to make sure that I get that information so I can promote that and maybe get somebody on the program as it gets near to talk and explain clearly what's happening, because I'm definitely down for that. You know, I know August is a you know, because of Marcus Garvey's birthday, a few other things that are going to be happening, you know.
That's right.
But I want to make sure that we promote that, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Can I just add this as well? Seeing that Alton Maddox was raised, I can't say I'm that much familiar with Alton Maddox, other than the fact that I've heard him on the radio many times. He used to come on WOL. There was a time a few years ago, I think his wife passed away. You know, through him coming on the radio and doing radio, I learned a lot about his history and the great work he had done. But what kind of disturbed me, and I might have the wrong end of the stick, is that he came on the radio one time and he was making a slight of appeal, and he was saying that that, you know, because he was banned from practicing in New York and the restrictions that were being put on him, he wasn't meeting his income, and I think he was trying to make an appeal. What occurred to me, and he's not the only one, what occurred to me is something we find here as well, is that a lot of these people who put their necks on the line and sacrifice their lives for the work of black people, sometimes I think they don't get the respect they really do. People come on the radio, we hear people come on all sorts of platforms singing their praises. But when it comes down to it, they honestly really get the protection and the respect they do. Sometimes that may involve setting up a fund for them, the money to support them in hard times, etc., etc. As a listener, sometimes it's quite clear to me that they're not getting that respect. And then, you know, we hear a lot of highfalutin talk, how they're great and how they're fantastic. At the end of the day, sometimes they need the bucks to support them, or they need the real protection. And sometimes I think they don't get it. And it makes me sometimes reluctant. It makes me, with hindsight, look at it and think, well, is it really worth it, helping these people, for them to just forget you or kick you to the curb? I don't know. That's just my thoughts. You may have it differently.
Yeah. Well, I think two things we should consider. One is, I think we should be looking at our ancestors for examples of how to deal with our current situation. And I think Sister Callie House, who is one of the early reparations organizers, sought to set up a mutual, a mutual benefits where we as a people pool our resources so that when we have situations, we just recently had the tragic death of one of our young men here who was hit and killed by a hit and run driver. And we had to pool resources to try to support his family, who has been a rock solid in the community.
No doubt, Brother Kwame. But one of
Brother Kwame and Sister Four. So one of the things that was lifted up was that we need to have something where we're all putting in a little bit of money every month, so that when situations arise, we have a mutual fund, right? Yeah. We have a mutual fund, a New African, Pan-African mutual fund that we're able to support each other, and we don't have to keep being so reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that comes to mind when you lifted it up. But then the second is on a more spiritual level, where, see, the work that we do for our people, we do for the Most High. We do for the ancestors.
That's right.
Whatever happens to me, whatever happens to my to those who decide to engage in this work, I give it up to the Most High, to the Creator. Some call Oludumare, some may call Mawu, some may call Allah, God. You called me to do this, right? You put me in this earth at this time, at this moment, as an African man of consciousness. And so because you called me in this way, I have to do what I'm called to do. And I have to let the universe take care of me. I do my best to be safe, not to be reckless, to try to live healthy. But at the end of the day, it's not just for the people. It's because the Most High has put us on this course to do this work. And so there will be those who betray us. When we think about Martin Luther King, who was advocating for peaceful nonviolence, more at the time of his assassination, the way he was viewed in polls was at his lowest.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, so this idea that you can fight in the interest of your people and just stay revered. I've been betrayed time and time again by the very people who I thought were my comrades, who I thought we were serving. Brother Odinga in Philadelphia with AAPRP told me at the very beginning of my activism work, he said, "Brother, the people may spit in your face, but you have to wipe that spit off and you have to continue to work in their interest. And I have tried to live by that because it's bigger than any one individual betrayal.
That's right.
It is, I'm a part of a larger movement that seeks to change the world and bring back into balance universe and a world that's out of balance.
Bring it back to my
so, yeah. So,
you know,
brother, I hear you.
In the book, you speak very well of Baba Odinga. You speak very well of him. He was a great person and influenced it. We have another caller, unknown caller. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Yes.
Greetings,
and sister.
Land. I'm giving a shout out to Baba Maule, Brother Maule Davis. And
hey, Mama, free the land.
Yeah, this is Sister Haiva. And to you, Baba Osi, I want to, you know, just start off by saying we appreciate your work, your revolutionary work that you're doing for us here in the community.
Thank you, my sister.
And I'm very proud of Maule.
Oh, definitely.
Earlier we were talking about great attorneys, you know, that helped lead the way. And so I want to give a honorary praise and shout out to the Honorable Baba Chokwe Lumumba.
Yes.
And, I mean, he is a revolutionary freedom fighter, you know, the greatest, one of our political leaders of all time. And he was such an awesome, he was just such a phenomenal brother for us and served so well, founding the New African People's Organization, all the work he did with the Malcolm X grassroots and all the legal work he did for us to help, you know, for our people. And so, and he was a role model. And one of the things we do, we have the Malcolm X grassroots movement every year, and Baba Chokwe, he's an ancestor now, but he was honored. And there was an article that I guess a statement you had put in our ad booklet, and I thought it was so moving. And one of the words that you said, Maule Davis, but brother Maule, you said that Chokwe showed us how to love, serve, and imagine and work toward a future where we can be our best selves again. His excellence had become our example. His sacrifice had become our standard. His struggle had become our starting point. And he did all this while being a loving husband, like you, Maule, father, friend, and comrade. Our greatest honor was to be that Chokwe encouraged us and that he counseled us. And our greatest honor is to the Honorable Chokwe Lumumba will be that we continue on his road to liberation, and we were there to serve as guides to others. So with that, I say, job well done, brother.
Thank you, sis.
Maule.
Thank you.
I say, God well done. We're proud of you. We appreciate your revolutionary work that you do with the Malcolm X grassroots movement and being a pillar. We have an independent African school, Kilambo. And Brother Maule has taken us to greater heights, and as we're soaring and succeeding. So I just wanted to give a shout out to that and just, you know, well done, job well done. And, we support you and hold you high esteem, and as you continuing in this road of Baba Chokwe, the Honorable Baba Chokwe Lumumba, you continuing on in his life. And I say, I say,
right on.
And Baba, I just want to let you know that, you know, Baba Chokwe was a model, and I met him through Comrade Willie, my godfather. Yeah. And I
That's how I met you. I love that man. I love Conrad. Miss him.
Yeah, so he introduced me to Baba Chokwe, and I had just seen him. We were in Baltimore at a State of the Black Race Conference, mm-hmm. and I met him, and I had just seen him either in Jet or Ebony representing Tupac, and here he comes, this tall, handsome brother wearing a dashiki.
Yep.
And I was like, man, I could do this, and it, see, and that's why it's so important to be able to see examples. Right. And I said, man, I could do this, and then we brought him to Georgia State with Baba AK, and he came, and I was the president of the Black Law Students Association, and just sat with him, and he came and lit the place on fire. You know how he spoke, man. He just made it plain. So yep. I give thanks that I had the opportunity. I've just been very, very blessed to be able to be in relationship with some of these revolutionary giants, scholar activists and warriors, that it just, you know, I'm grateful. All I'm trying to do is keep holding up that red, black, and green, keep flying that flag high. The flag that was given to us about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and just keep doing what we know that our ancestors and the Creator has called us to do. So I'm deeply, deeply honored to even have my name mentioned in any way close to Baba Tshokwe, because his life is a exemplar of to be a liberation lawyer. And so I just give thanks. I know we're coming to the end, brother. Thank you for letting me share. If anybody is looking for the book, it was published by Third World Press.
Haki
Madhubuti, Haki. So Third World Press. And my good friend Mike Samanga this was the first book published under his leadership of Third World Press. You can get it also on my website at Mawuli, Mawuli, MawuliDavis.com, and just order it, and we'll sign it. We're going to be going around doing a book tour around the country in the fall. So it's a lot. We're just going to keep trying to share what we've learned and to as many young people as we can. The way when I was 22 and a half years old, I was touched, and nearly 30 years later, I have not been the same, and I give thanks for that. I found my African mind, like Baba Conrad would say.
Yeah,
you know, he said he found me, he discovered me. he helped clothe me in my African mind.
That's right, man. You know, I was in Chicago very briefly. I really want to get a chance to see that track that he developed, get developed in Chicago. I really want, I'm going to do that next time I get the chance to be in Milwaukee and Chicago. Definitely want to do that. In fact, for me, it's like a pilgrimage. This is something that, you know, it's just like when you go to some place and there's that site that you must go to, it, because if you didn't go to that, then you really didn't go, you know?
That's right. That's right. And, you know. And then we got to go by his grave site. They have all of the, everything is erected now at Baba Conrad's grave site.
Beautiful. So, I definitely will make that, because, you know, getting into NBUF, the National Black United Front, and, you know, knowing him and all the other brothers and sisters in the National Black United Front has been, once again, a part of my development as a man, and my understanding as a conscious brother, you know. So I, you know, just like you, my brother, I've been blessed as well, and I've been blessed to meet you and to know you, and do whatever I can to help you, you know.
Thank you, Bob.
Ourselves,
thank you.
Always.
Asante, Sana.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, brothers and sisters, I thank you once again. This has been an outstanding program with my friend and my brother. Brother Attorney Mawuli Davis here with the Davis-Bozeman Johnson Law Firm here in Atlanta that does the work for our people. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. I look forward to seeing you on Friday. Be safe, family. Peace.